Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Red Light Podcast Redux. I'm your host, Gina Savage. Today I'm joined with a very dear friend of mine that I've known for a long time. I always do this list of credits up top. From Tough Crowd with Colin Quinn, The View, Comedy Central, Jim Gaffigan Show, Oxygen, Law & Order, Court TV.
That's how old I am.
Court TV. She's performed at the Kennedy Center. We're going to talk about stand-up and stilettos, too. I have reason to ask you a question about that.
Okay.
I want to welcome Karen Bergreen to the Red Light Podcast.
Thank you. I'm clapping for myself because I do that when I get on stage. I
also want to welcome the WROM radio listeners in Detroit and internet users worldwide and subscribers. All right, here we are. You walked up the steps.
I did. That was so good. I feel like I should get an ice cream sundae now.
But that was, you can mark it off. However, like 30 calories for you, whatever it is.
I'm imagining it's more because it was exhausting.
Yeah, I do it, and I've done it for, I have been here like 18 years. It's the longest residence I've ever had.
Crazy.
It's really nice, though, and it smells. I wish that your listeners could smell the smell of your place. It's so, it's, what is this, like cinnamon incense or something?
I think it might be a jasmine, sort of a...
A candle?
It could be a, you know, a thing I can't pronounce from India.
Right.
I don't know.
It's so, I feel like I'm going to start saying namaste, which I usually make fun of, but I'm in the mode.
I'm glad, because this is an intimate conversation right. We're going to have. So we go back. We go back. And you're a native New York. We go back from the Boston Comedy Club days, the 90s.
Yes.
And how long were you doing stand-up at the time that I met you? Because that was
I met you kind of in the beginning.
95, 96?
I met you around like 98. Okay. I think I was still like probably doing it like a year or two.
Okay.
And I was just there. I got into that club because it was back when the Barricats management company and I worked together.
Yes.
And so I got I always got that 1 o'clock in the morning spot.
Yeah, you got that spot. I remember. All right, so we're going to go back. We like to paint the portrait.
Okay, fantastic.
Of Karen Bergreen. You grew up in New York City, is that correct?
I did. I grew up not too far from here. I grew up on 83rd Street.
83rd on the east side?
On the east side.
Wow, you would have been my neighbor.
East side. Like back when New York was not so crazy, like saying you were from the Upper East Side didn't sound like. I live right, like I'm a hedge fund, you know.
Right.
And I grew up here, and then.
And then you went to Harvard.
I went to Harvard.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have two older brothers.
Okay, so you're the little
sister.
I'm
the baby.
Okay. I have all these, you know, therapy things
I think comedians generally are the youngest. Are you the youngest?
I am the baby.
Yeah, I think it's the youngest. Because we're all dying for attention.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I really do. I think so.
Yeah. So you're the baby, but I read that you, you know, when you were, I don't know if this is before or after Harvard, but you had interned for Politico's and you interned at nonprofits and you interned.
I did all this.
Museums.
I did all this sort of.
You were a good student, were you? Now
I was a pretty good student. Harvard. I was kind of a goody. I wasn't really a goody two shoes because I was always in trouble. Like when I was really young, like I was always in trouble in school because I was incredibly disruptive and I always wanted to play pranks. Like I called my teacher up in fourth grade. I called up my teacher on the phone. Like I looked up her number in the phone book. This is how old we are, Gina.
Yeah,
like the phone book. Okay, and I called her and said, look, it's Karen. We're going to pretend. I was bossing her around. I'm like, we're going to pretend tomorrow that I'm not me. We're going to pretend I'm absent, but my cousin from France is going to be there because my mother had this weird wig that sort of looked like the way Mrs. Newhart looked on the Bob Newhart show.
Really?
It's like kind of curly because it was sort of in back then. It was like post that time. So she gave it to me for costume. So I'm like, I'm going to come in and pretend. Okay. It was so wrong. And somebody like, okay, I don't, didn't even speak any French. So
wait, did
I
you wear that wig?
She said I couldn't do it. But I'm like, I'm mad that I wish, because they're like, I have a little bit of a fear. Like, I don't think I'm a good prankster. Like, I think I'm a good jokester, but not a good, like she said, don't do it. Well, it'll disrupt the day. And I
think part of pranking is probably not calling and asking in advance.
Right. Right.
Just like showing up like...
Right. The real stars right. are just doing it.
They just go in, right. you know. Yeah. But all right. So that's a kind of an insight. So you're kind of like a little mischief maker.
I was a mischief maker, but ultimately wanted to be, like, would be very upset if I got into trouble.
Okay.
Like, it was very important to me that authority figures liked me. I wanted to go into politics.
You did.
Everyone thought I'd be Bella Abzug. Do you remember Bella Abzug?
Of course I do.
You know, and
with
I wasn't.
With the hats and all that.
With the hats. Yeah. I wasn't a hat. Person, but I think she was like the one female politician at the
yes.
time. So everybody's like, "Oh, you're Bella Abzug," even though you know it's so pathetic.
Yeah, I remember there was also at that time there was Ruth Messenger.
Yes,
and she, I went to school with her son. I think his name is Danny Messenger. I think I don't know what happened. Like, I don't follow this anymore. But yeah, I remember.
She's
like,
kind of great, Ruth Messenger.
Yeah, she's
yeah.
pretty great. Yeah. I mean, you know, I followed all the New York politicians.
Right. It was fun, you know. Right? And I was like I used to go on nuclear freeze marches and stuff like that.
Oh, you did all that. And how old are you? Like, this is your teenage years,
dude? My teenage years.
Okay.
And I was definitely like, you know, I didn't understand the appeal of Reagan. I didn't understand any of that stuff. Like, I just didn't get it. And it's funny now because everyone paints Reagan now. We're going to, like, alienate all
right.
of your listeners. But everyone paints...
No, I don't think so.
Everyone paints him now like he's this hero. And, like, the thing is, people... who grew up when I did were like, no, he's really bad. He like created all this, like he went in, he was very much of a war hawk. People accuse him of the person who's like the one who got rid of the middle class. And I was pretty big on social issues. I was very pro-choice as a kid, even though I didn't even like, my first boyfriend was gay. Like I didn't, there was no
so was
choice
mine.
To be
so
made.
So was mine. And he's a fashion designer now.
Right. Mine dresses up in women's clothes. So.
Does he have a career in that?
Like, no, he's like a fun thing he does. He's so nice. He's like a great guy. Like yeah. he was, like, I think it's a good way to start. It's like a starter boyfriend. Like it's kind of like it gets
yeah, like,
you.
Right.
You sort of get
feel
the
pretty
idea.
And, yeah, yeah.
Right. You get the idea, but it's not so aggressive, you know.
Right. Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I'd recommend that as a first boyfriend for everyone.
Yeah.
Especially for
it
gay
happens,
man.
Yeah, and I think it happens a lot to those of us who live in New York. Right. It's like, you know, whatever. All right, so you have but were you like a funny? Were you
funny?
You're always funny in these.
Always
environments.
Funny.
Did it seem? You know. Well, okay, so. When do you, so you go to Harvard and you study
history.
European history.
Yes.
And
but I was kind of into cultural history. Like I studied really art history, literary history. Like I wasn't really into sort of dates and battles and wars and stuff like that. I was much more interested in what was going on in people's lives and how they saw themselves. That was definitely, I was really into like European art of like the 19th century. I was really into how people, like, I think I wanted to get an idea of like how it's almost like an anthropology thing, but
I was literally thinking the same thing.
Right.
Yes, yes, it is. Yes.
And I remember my roommates from college, and this is Harvard where people like went into TV and stuff like that. But I remember I tried to get on the Lampoon. I tried once and I was rejected, and I didn't have any resilience. Like I didn't understand. No, you're supposed to try like. It's like a comedy show. Like you audition once, you don't get it, and
right.
then you keep auditioning. Like I didn't get that. I thought you had one bite of the apple. It was like getting into college. Like you apply once, and if you don't get, so I never applied again. Nobody ever said Harvard's a big place. Nobody ever says, no, you idiot. Like do it again. So I did other things. I did theater. I did my own thing. Like I directed plays and stuff like that. But I would have loved to have. I wish I had had a voice in my ear saying, you should keep doing this. Of course, I can't rewrite history.
Right.
But this all goes to, I wasn't in that sort of Harvard clique of people that then went on
and did
to LA and like people in my class are like amazing successes in that area. But I just didn't follow. I didn't follow that at all. I mean, I was like a sort of a nerdy history person who occasionally dabbled in theater. And my roommate was like, you should go into TV after you graduate. And I'm like, I don't do that. Because my family is kind of...
Well, yeah,
they're appropriate. You know, my father is... You know, my father is... Both my parents are still alive. And they're, like, very, very active. And my father is still like, I don't understand what you do. Like, they think it's like if I said I want to be a hooker. Like, the idea of their kid being in show business, it's like vaudeville to them. Like, why would we send our kid to Harvard to do this? So I felt like it wasn't available.
Now, what do they do? Or what did your father do?
My father was a lawyer and sort of businessman. Okay. And my mom did a few different things. One thing is she had like a little shop. My mom's kind of a creative person. She had a shop. And I think she, if she had the little devil on her, like angel devil on her shoulder telling her what to do, I think she should have been a writer. Like, she's a very good observer of human behavior and stuff like that. So okay. I do think, you know, if I say that I didn't have one thing, it was that whatever ability to see what you should be doing. You know, I had to get to that.
Do you think that, because I ask this of guests, like, do you think part of what you're doing is like a people, were you pleasing them in the choice that you made?
Yes, people pleaser.
Right.
Real people pleaser. Yeah. And it made me sick to let anybody down. And in fact, when I was a lawyer,
Right.
And then I did this thing where I worked in a law firm, which is just everything you think, like boring.
Yeah, I worked in one.
Okay, so you know, like, it's just fucking hell. I'm allowed to say fuck, right? Okay.
You could say that.
Okay,
yeah.
It's horrible. So then, do they allow you to do that in Michigan? Do they bleep it out?
They do. No, they don't bleep it out.
Hi, Michigan.
I mean, your parents might be listening at some point. Do they listen to podcasts?
No, they would be like, yeah. What's a podcast? My father, on the way here, I talked to my father, and he said, can you give me another coaching session on Twitter? Like, I have to teach him Twitter, like, every 10 seconds. Because I think he'd really enjoy Twitter because it's good for people with a short attention span, you know. So, so then after the law firm, I went and I did this really fun thing. I worked for a federal judge where, you know, I don't know if you know what that is. Like, you help them write the decisions. You watch all the trials. It's a really
great, that's fascinating.
It is so interesting.
I love it. I love the law. I love it. You know, it's
fascinating. It is really fun. But when it was done, because it's like, it's a thing where you have to leave after 2 years, or mine was 2 years, but some of them are a year. And I was like, I'm never going to get a job that's this good. Like, there's no other job that I could do in the law that's as much fun as this. And I thought, I can't believe I've already had the most fun I'm ever going to have. I kept thinking that.
Right.
Because the thought of going back to a law firm was not acceptable.
Well, like, I mean, I read a few pieces that you wrote for the Huffington Post and some things and that you had online. And, you know, when you're like in a law firm and you're filing and collating and, you know, redlining, and it's just tedious work, and you're there hours, you know, editing and, you know, putting motions together, whatever you do.
Right.
You know, it's just long and.
It's
make
so
another
endless.
Make 80 copies of the same thing so that, you know,
it's soul sucking.
It's so bad.
And the thing is, you know, the other thing is that the lawyers obviously make more money than other kinds of jobs that you get, like right at that age group. But I found and I saw it in my colleagues, like, we'd end up like buying stuff for you. End up buying yourself. Like, I buy myself really expensive clothes. Like, you don't really need expensive clothes, but it kind of makes you feel a little bit better. I sort of understand why people do all that stuff. Like, they buy, like, people are in unhappy marriages to rich people, and then they buy themselves like an expensive bracelet, and they think it's going to make all their problems go
away.
Right,
it's a high. It's a high.
Yeah,
it's a momentary high. And then the reality.
I did not do that at all. Like, the second I started doing the stand up, I had no. I was like, I'm going to buy everything at TJ Maxx. You know.
Yeah. All right, how do you fall into the stand-up after all of that, after all that happens?
Well, I did a little bit right after college, but I couldn't, like, the life really, I did it like 5 or 6 times, and I thought everyone was a weirdo, and everyone seemed, I didn't like.
And nothing's changed with that,
right,
by the way.
But like, I didn't, and I was too young to kind of embrace it. Like, right. I was like, it was so out of my comfort zone, you know. I had been around people who were like super smart and directed and appropriate for the past, you know, my whole life, right?
Yeah.
And then I'm around people who, I'm sure some of them were really brilliant, but, you know, like, when you're in this sort of entry level area of comedy, you get every freak in town, especially back in that time. You know, I mean, now comedy is a little bit more fancy, and so, like, you get a little, the pool is a little bit more interesting, but back then it was hard. It was very hard for me to have a conversation.
And were you one of the few? I mean, I really feel there's a lot of women. I feel there's a lot of women stand-ups now, and I think a lot of. I mean, you know, you've done the Broadly Funny show, but I know it's a woman show. But I see a lot. I don't want to, you know, stay off topic. Well, it's on topic, but what I mean is, were there women at the time that did you? Were you around a lot of women?
In these kind of shows, there were a lot of women, but they really weren't. I felt like the women were there for a different reason. Like they were the women that I met. I mean, this is just not true now. You know, I think maybe the women who were really good were performing in other places, because I know there were women who were really good then. Now, then when I came back to it a few years later, there were women who were really funny. And what happens, this is what I think happens to women in comedy.
Okay.
And I see it now because I teach. I think the women are funnier than the men in the beginning. I really do. I just think that you have to have so much more confidence than guys who have the same level of talent to do what you do, because there's a little bit of a sexism still in the business.
Yes.
So they have the confidence. And then what happens is, there's more men giving more men. It's kind of like what happened in the business world, like whatever years ago. More men are giving more men, more boys or whatever, opportunities. And some of the girls are getting discouraged and leaving and going like in another direction creatively, or abandoning it altogether. I think that's happening less and less and less now, because there's so many. It's being proven over and over that there's so many funny women out there.
Yeah, I mean, were you part of that?
The picture?
The picture.
You know, I wasn't part of the picture, but I have to say, I wasn't part of the picture because I was performing. I had a show that afternoon.
Yes.
So I was like, if there's sort of a solidarity with women.
Can you,
reason.
Will you let the folks know what that was? That was,
was this Facebook group in...
It was for 2016, the class of 2016, yeah. Women in comedy.
Yeah.
And I
there are these.
Jessica Delfino was.
Yeah, and Selena Kopeck, I think.
Yeah. There were a few people involved. I saw the invite to do that.
Yeah, they're amazing. They're so great, these women.
They're great.
They have sort of, like, I wish I had a group like that when we first started. Like,
yes.
You know, it was so doggy. I mean, I look at you and I think of Boston Comedy Club and Louis Schaeffer, who
was the host of the shows.
Who was the host of the shows.
He's in England now.
He's in England. And, you know, he really resented that I was on the show. He hated women. Hated women. And he would say to me,
loved Kevin Hart.
One time he said to me, I said, I just think you're so funny. And he goes, really? He goes, I just don't think you're funny. Like, you will never, nothing will ever happen for you. You will never make it. Nothing's going to happen for you. And I remember when he went, and we ended up having like a.
I love how you're just smiling when you say
that.
Well,
because
story.
it's kind of stories, we all have 50 of them.
Yeah.
You know, people who are just such jerks, you know, and then when he went to England, I remember I gave him a card, like there was like a roast, I think it was at the Boston.
Yeah, we did a roast of Louis Schaeffer.
And then I gave him a card and I just wrote, you were the first to discourage me. And he really was the first one. He was the first one that I felt like I saw his face in my head every night before I went to sleep as somebody I just wanted to like jump over, you know, and the business, like, and you know, it's his own crap, you know, so many of these people, it's like they don't even know. I know a lot of male comics who will say, oh, I like women, they're really funny, da 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 da, but then push comes to shove, it's their own crap that's in the way. It has nothing to do, they would never say, you know, in their head, I don't like women or I don't think they're funny. But if you said to them, what women do you think are funny, they probably couldn't name any.
Oh, I agree. And to address Louis Schaeffer for a minute. Okay, so I'm a woman managing that club with a person that does things like that, you know.
But he was really funny.
He was funny, but he was crazy. Right. And he, you know, and he had to be managed because he, you know, would be out of line a good deal of the time. Right. So if you're listening, Louis, how's your career going? How you doing out there?
Right.
Anyway, so you're doing stand up, and you're a woman in comedy, And however many women are out there, what's makes you feel like you're on the right track
now?
Okay. No.
Oh, I actually got attention sort of early, and I think it's because I wore glasses. And no woman wore glasses. Like, I wore glasses, and I had, my humor was not, I used to do very observational humor. It was kind of, I wouldn't call it smart. It was like slightly clever, and people were like, oh, wow, women have a brain kind of thing. And so I got noticed by Vincent over at Barry Katz, who is now has his own company.
Vincent Astrid.
Yeah. And he was very good to me and, you know, kind of made me feel good about my career and stuff, and introduced me to agents and stuff. Like, I definitely, that was very, very helpful.
That was instrumental.
Instrumental. I got into Aspen Comedy Festival pretty early. Like, I think it was in my fourth year of comedy or something.
It's fair to say you're a smart comic.
Yeah, I'm smart.
Yeah, yeah. You're a smart comic, and you write really witty jokes, and they're all relatable. And so, you know, it makes perfect sense to me why he would, you know, have sought you out or found you, however he did. Or,
right.
You know, so you're getting some, what are some of the first successes that you, so Aspen and then?
Did Aspen, I did, got on Law and Order, which was, you know, I didn't have a big, huge part, but it was just getting on a witness.
You were a witness?
And I did a scene with Jerry Orbach. And he was so nice. I have to say, because now that I've done I haven't done a ton of TV, but I've done a few things, and you know, I didn't realize at the time how incredibly nice Jerry Orbach was, and Benjamin Bratt, both of them, because when you think about how many day players were on that show, that right. they could have easily just been like, you know, about every single right, person right. that came in, and they obviously sort of enjoyed watching people get their big break. You know, I think it was really fun for them, and they were really, really nice. I mean, the only horrible thing about it is that I had been dating somebody, and we broke up the night before, and I remember having, like, that bittersweet feeling, like, I'm supposed to be enjoying this, and I'm not enjoying it enough. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to just every second of it to be perfect. So I wish I could have a do-over, but, you know...
But, you know, at least you showed up. I mean, you weren't devastated by the breakup right. to not, you know, some people can't get, you know, they're like, right. everything is destroyed. They can't right. show up for their lives. You
right.
know? So that's,
right.
you know, that's Thank me, you. Basically. That's, no, I'm kidding.
I wish I had known I'm you joking. Then. That would have been a really nice thing to hear.
Aw.
So,
well,
I mean, I knew you, but not like, you know, professionally, like you could be like, oh, Karen, you know,
Karen, it's okay. No, I'm kidding. But anyway, but yeah, I do that a lot now too, because I think the thing about comedy is like, look at all the stuff. I mean, life happens, right? Life happens, and like, you know, like baseball players, football players, anyone's job, and you have to, you know, there's some expressions and some, you know, places that I go, but you suit up and you show up regardless of what's going on. Just do it.
Well,
you just
like
show
we're at
up.
We're at the age. You know, I had one of my best friends passed away. And like, I knew it was going to happen. Like, she slipped into her sort of final coma. She was very ill. She slipped into her final coma, like, while I was at a graduation show for my students. Oh. And I just, like, there was nothing for me to do. She right. lived in another city.
Right.
And nobody said, it was sort of, there was the family didn't want, like, people coming around at this point.
Right, right, right.
And I just was sort of like, I have no other choice but to just get up on the stage and phone it in. And, you know, I didn't have to do a great job. I had to do a competent job. And I did. And it was fine. And I just think people, that's part of life. Like, you have to... You know, sometimes really great things are going on, and on top of it, you get to go up on stage, you know. So I do think, you know,
right.
it's
the scales of right. life. You
right.
know, it's up, it's down, and then somehow you try to, like, I constantly feel like I literally hang in the balance of the highs and lows of it all.
Right.
I want to talk about...
I think we're the same, Gina. I think we have the same.
We have a lot of similar... Right.
Personality traits.
Personality yeah. traits, which is... So let me... All right, so you do. I saw Dave Juskow the other day.
Oh,
and Dave,
I love him.
He's great. He's doing a show. Well, it'll have happened by the time this airs. But he's doing this Godfather thing over at the Village Underground.
Oh, is he like reenacting it live?
Yeah. He's written his version of it. So
is that tonight?
That'll be tomorrow night.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah. So, but anyway, I told him I was meeting with you, and he said, please ask Karen Bergreen why she wore pants on Stand Up in Stilettos. Now that, if, you know, for those
I
of you listening,
I love him so much.
He says it's. What did he say? He said something like it frightens him that you did that.
Okay. A, I've never worn a stiletto. I mean, we had this.
What
whole,
did you wear for?
I wore a wedge.
You wore a wedge
I'm
on
like
stand
all,
up. In
I asked them. I asked them.
Could
if I
wear
could
a? You did.
I said. Can I? I went through the whole wardrobe thing ahead of time. I said, look, I'll do it if you really want me to. I'll do what you want. Because, again, I have that pleasing the authorities thing. I didn't want to get in trouble. But it's just so not my person. I was actually thinking, you know, I sometimes, like, I'm wearing a dress now. Like, sometimes I like throwing on a dress. But on stage, I don't know. I think it's come. It goes back to when I first started. And I just wanted to de-gender myself on stage. And I think that's part of my whole thing on in comedy, you know. Even though I talk about my husband and my kids now, it's very unsexual. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. And I have the opposite problem, right, in a sense that, like, you know, everything that I talk about is sort of, you know, it's not so much sexual in nature, but there's some sort of right. sex vibe that, like, and I
but
some of it,
but I think that's okay because that's you.
It
you know,
yeah.
What I mean?
I wish it. Sometimes I wish it wasn't. Right, you know, right. Like I wish I could just tone it down a notch. But right. It's kind of like some stuff's in the physicality of a person, and that's just kind of the way the body moves. And I can't.
I don't know. I think that's authentic for you, and I'm all about being authentic.
Fair enough.
So it would have been so inauthentic for me to get up and stand up in stilettos with a
stiletto?
With a stiletto.
It would have been weird.
Yeah. And I thought the stilettos was more like a metaphor for women, you know?
Yes, it is. Yes, and you're right. And it makes sense. And I like the shoes. I like the boots you're wearing which are a wedge.
Which are a wedge. I know. I sound like an... I mean,
we're
honestly,
so girly right
I'm
now.
I'm going to go home and with my shopping cart.
You look
cart.
Beautiful. Oh, you look you. Fantastic. You too.
Sona Bella. No, I'm kidding.
Sona Bella. All right. Talk about... You know, your career is going well. You've got, you know, management. When do you meet your husband? And your husband is an attorney, correct?
My husband's an attorney. My husband, for years, really until recently, was a prosecutor. So he has, like, a totally interesting life story.
That's an awesome job. Put them away.
And he really, I mean, like, he had, it's like somebody had a contract out on him. Like, he really.
He's the real deal.
Yeah, he's like.
He's the real deal, this guy.
Yes. And he...
we don't get to say his name?
No.
Okay,
I just,
that's fine.
No, I mean, it's not hard to figure out.
Yeah, he had a contract out of his life. We're not going to say his
like,
name.
I'm just like, you know, and he's... We do, like, you know...
I got a separate deal. It's fine. It's good. Right. It's all good.
He was much more weird about it when he was in working for the government, and now he's not. Like, he was much more, like, wanting me to be careful what you say on Facebook, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm like... So,
right.
I understand that.
How do you two meet, though?
Oh, so we meet at the holiday party of my good friend who I went to high school with, who we went to college with. And I liked him right away. Although I immediately liked him. And he had actually dated a friend of mine. I remembered his name. And he had dated a friend of mine. And because I was like, wow, you're dating a prosecutor. That's so fucking cool. Like, and I was like, I'd always want to date a prosecutor. So I remembered his name. And then years later, I mean, he had actually been married before. And like, so it was like my friend wasn't even like remotely in the picture. And I think she was married at the time I met him. And I'm like, oh my God, you made out with my friend. Like, I was so weird and excited to meet him. And then he shows up. I said, I'm opening for Lewis. Like, we were just sort of having conversations. He's like, so what, when's your next show? Blah, blah, blah. It was a Christmas party. And I said, oh, I'm actually opening for Lewis Black on Christmas.
Which is a good pairing, by the way.
At Caroline's. Yes. So I go to Caroline's, like, and it's, you know, whatever, it's a great show, blah, blah, blah. And after the show, he's there. But he's there with this gorgeous woman.
What?
And I'm like, oh, my God, that guy. I was like, I have so misread this whole situation. Like, I am an idiot, right? But no, it was his good friend from growing up. And he had told her, like, make sure you say we're just friends. And she was just, like, sort of caught up in the fact that she had been at a comedy show and it was so funny that she just assumed that it was so obvious, you know?
Oh, my God.
And I'm friends with her. Like, so it was like we all went out afterward and stuff like that. And then we kind of we started dating pretty much. Like
after that,
right away. After that, yeah.
And I mean, because of his, you had a lot in common. Is he a funny person?
Really funny.
Yeah, I thought so. There's a thing with attorneys. I will say this: there is a thing. I do think there. I mean, rest in peace, Greg Giraldo, mm-hmm. attorney. Dan Natterman, attorney. I don't know who else. There's a few people out there.
Dimitri was in law school.
Dimitri Martin.
Yeah, was in law school when
very funny.
Right.
Very funny. I mean, there's like
Al Lubell.
I want to say his name five times now. I'm Al Lubell. I'm going back to the 80s with that. But yeah, I mean, there's like a funny gene. In the attorney.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I always say to people, like, it's not really that different to skill. Like, when you're an attorney, like, especially if you're a litigation person, which is what most of these people are, in order to come up with a legal argument, you take a bunch of facts, and then you come up with a persuasive conclusion based on the facts. When you're writing a joke, it's the same idea. You take a bunch of facts and you come up with a conclusion that's not persuasive, usually one that's absurd.
Yes.
But I think the thought process is actually not that different.
That's very interesting.
Thank
you very much. I like
I'm trademarking that.
I as an aside, I always wanted to play an attorney. I think it's, you know.
You
like
could.
Yeah.
You could.
Like the Law and Order chick.
You could,
what's her face? What's her name? You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, like Jill Hennessy. You could
or
be
like a Jill Hennessy.
You could be a Jill Hennessy. You could
who's
be.
Who's the one that we're thinking of, though? You're looking her up. You know,
From the regular.
SVU, maybe?
Well, SVU, the attorney, the prosecutor, Angie Harmon, are you thinking of?
Thinking of Angie Harmon.
You're not thinking of Marishka, because she.
Yes, I am.
She's a cop.
Oh, well, then I want to be her.
She's a cop.
I want to be
you
her.
You could be a cop. But I see more. I could see you being. They would make you get your hair cut a little bit.
Want me to cut my hair no matter what. They're like, please act your age. Begging me.
No, but when I went in to talk to the casting director, they were like, we would never cast you as a lawyer. You just don't look like one. And my husband and I always laugh because it's like so many lawyers look exactly like me. Like, it's just sort of like the slightly boring Jewish look. Like, it's just a very,
You are very lawyerly.
Very.
I've worked in those offices. I have a couple. Okay. So you're married now and you have children. Career going.
Beautiful children.
Beautiful children that are an inspiration for your comedy.
Just in case they're listening to me.
Beautiful.
Really helpful. They're so helpful, my kids. They just say all these really fabulous things.
Anything new that one's come up with? Because there's always one that's got something to say.
Well, yesterday, and I put this on Facebook, but I swear my son is like, he comes rushing into the room. He goes, Mommy, I can scream so loud that it breaks the sound barrier. And you won't be able to hear it. And I said, oh, my God, you should scream like that every time.
That's brilliant.
It was so great. I was like, thank you. Thank you. I like give him a big kiss.
That's so great. How old is he?
He's just 12.
He's 12. He's a genius.
Genius.
Facebook.
Love it. Karen Bergreen. Anybody wants to be my friend.
Okay, what are the pros and cons of Facebook, in your opinion? Because you do utilize it.
Okay, I think the pros are, I have so many pros.
Okay, let's go.
Okay, the pros are that it's a really good way to keep up with people that you don't actually want to see. It's so great. Like, I'm so curious. Like, I'll be like, whatever happened to that person I went to camp with for one summer? And, you know, it's kind of like curiosity killed the cat. Like, I'm dying to know what happened to these people. Of course, the bad side of that is sometimes they're like, yeah, let's get together. And you're like, fuck, like, I really wanted to just find out what you're doing and then call it a day. Right. But it's also a good way to keep up with people. I like trying jokes out on people, but it's more like I like the community aspect of it. There's something really fun about meeting people who have similar opinions, you know, about like a TV show or, you know, if I have a question, like where's a good tailor? Or, I mean, I make jokes on Facebook, but I'll also be like, I need to find a good recipe for, you know, a brownie. Can you, it's like better than Wikipedia.
It's convenient. It's really convenient. I'm addicted to it in some ways.
Yes.
And
you feel in this world that we're in where you feel disconnected, it kind of connects you.
It does. It connects you. It also disconnects you. My personal experience is that, like, you know, there's sometimes, you know, it makes it just a little too easy to stalk.
Right.
Right? You can go into that spiral.
Yes.
Into that downward crazy.
Well, I have.
How do you avoid that, Karen Bergreen?
You have to be disciplined. But
are you disciplined?
You know, I have a different thing. Like when people tell me that they're sick on Facebook and they're people that I don't even know, I'll end up following to make sure that they're okay. Like I really want them to be okay. And then they'll be like, you know, somebody will pop up on Facebook and they'll be like, hi, this is so-and-so's sister. Or, like she passed away this morning. Like it's honestly, it's so, on the one hand, it's sort of like the circle of life. It's nice to see people being like show their babies and stuff like that. On the other hand, I'm like, extra mourning for these people that I don't know that aren't in my life. Like it's sucking a lot of emotional energy from me. And then the other bad thing I think for people in our business is sometimes if things aren't going well and you hear a lot of other people's good news, it's just hard to take.
Right. It can really, really put, yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, we get it. Okay.
I call
you won another Emmy.
Yeah.
Get over yourself.
Yeah. When that happens, I skyrocket to a downfall.
Right.
Or skyrocket.
And then they'll be like, instead of just saying, I won another Emmy, yay for me, they'll be like, does anyone have a good person that they use for polishing? Because I need to polish my second Emmy. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
they'll brag this some weird way. Like,
Dicky Comet.
Right.
Dicky Comet. I want to get to motherhood. Mm-hmm. You wrote for the Huffington Post, you said there was this article, Hollywood Calling. You remember that article?
Oh, yes.
What happened there?
Okay, so that was a case. That's the one about the attachment parenting one?
Yes.
Okay, so this was when Blossom, whatever her name is, from Big Bang Theory, wrote an article about how she, I think she slept with her baby every night in her bed, right? I think that was it. She said, and that everyone should do that. She didn't say that everyone should do it, but then suddenly everybody's like, it's saying that she said everyone should do it. And then I wrote an article, I wrote something about how I think everybody should do what he or she wants to do. Like if you want, it's like breastfeeding. I mean, the idea, I had such a bad experience with breastfeeding and my baby almost died because of those crazy breastfeeding Nazis at the hospital. And I think, you know, okay, so it probably is a little bit better for your kid. But now that I have kids that are 12 and 10, there are so many choices in my life that I've made about my children that are so much more important to their future than whether or not I breastfed. Like,
right.
That is, parenting is such a marathon. Like, the idea that there's all this focus on this baby sleeping in the bed and the it's all a bunch of crap put out by magazines and TV shows and stuff like that. I'm just like, sort of go with your instincts, talk to your friends. Like, it's kind of, talk to your pediatrician. Like, mm-hmm. There's no sort of one answer. But of course, that doesn't go with, like, this, that doesn't sell anything to say that. So I wrote that, and then somebody from, I think it was like the Dr. Oz show. It was some show, maybe Dr. Phil. It was Dr. Phil's show then, calls me up.
Okay, because you didn't mention that.
I know,
name,
I didn't say it back then.
But now you
but
can say it.
But now I can say it because it's like years later. But
okay.
The Dr. Phil show calls me up and says, do you want to come on as an expert? Okay, and I had said I'm not an expert. I mean, the only thing that makes me an expert is that I've had two children and, you know, they're still alive. But they,
yes.
So, you know, they... And say that attachment parenting is bad. And it's like nobody gets the point. I mean, I think parenting is really hard, you know.
Isn't all parenting attachment in some form?
Yeah, I mean, you have to sort of figure out, like, what you're going to, you know, there's some things that work for you that don't work for you. If you want to go to work or you have to go to work, then work. You know, I don't understand why mommy wars thing is, like, created by magazine and TV people.
You're right. I think everything's created for, right, you know, to sell something.
Right.
Even this. Right. Not really.
Buy whatever the sponsor is selling.
We're going to talk about your books because clearly you took some time off from stand up.
Right.
To write.
Well, what happened was
Karen has two, and I want to talk about both the names. She's got two books. Murder is involved in both of them.
Murder, Romance, and Humor.
Following Polly and Perfect is Overrated, Karen Burgreen. These are must-haves. I have them now.
What happened was, I had been performing all the time. I'd been working really just about every night in stand-up and going out. I remember going out on a lot of auditions. I did a TV show right before I got pregnant. I did a lot of stuff happening. And then after I had my first baby, I actually kind of brought him around. I had to stay home with him. He was premature, so I had to stay home with him. But people were like, oh, I guess you're never going to do this again. And I've sort of written off very quickly by everybody.
Interesting. You're having babies, so you're done.
Yeah, it was really weird. And my material, and it wasn't just them, it was me, because my material, which had been so observational and stuff, I didn't connect with anymore. And we were talking before about authenticity and about you being you, and if you're sexual, so what? That's who you are, you know? And I started to really want to talk about being a parent on stage. So it was almost like I had to start again. It was like a different persona for me. It was just a different part of me that I was developing. It wasn't funny at the beginning. It was as if I was an open micer.
Did you have, to that end, did you have postpartum?
I had it. That's what Perfect is Overrated is actually about, a woman with postpartum, much more. She's a assistant DA and she has much more serious postpartum. But I kind of think that most women have this, which is like an identity crisis. Like one day I was a comic and then everybody's like, hi, mom. Like I remember people going like, hi, mom, how's motherhood? How's being a mother? And it's kind of like you have this new job that, that you don't know anything about. And it's weird. I guess it's not wrong that they said that to me, but it's just an odd thing to experience that suddenly I'm like somebody who changes diapers. You know, I'm somebody who doesn't sleep. I'm somebody, it's all this stuff that wasn't in my experience before. And, there's some women that you meet that, oh my God, this is what they were meant to do. And they've lived to do this. But I'd say that's about 10%. I think most women who have kids are a little bit like,
what happened here?
Yeah, they're like, oh my God. I remember it wasn't until my kids went to nursery school and I met other parents who were like, it's when I learned that you could actually have a glass of wine while your kids were playing. I was so, again, trying to please, did everything by the book. And then I really, as soon as my oldest was three, it was very different. But until that moment, until that time, I did my stand up, but I wasn't particularly funny. And
with Following Polly, how does that in the course of doing stand up, how does that develop?
I was just home more and my husband wasn't home that much because he was really busy with work and probably not wanting to deal with the baby. And so I just started to write Following Polly. I just had always, Following Polly is about a woman who follows the woman from college who's like the bitchy, perfect, whatever, horrible person who's overly successful. We all know that person. And if you don't, you're that person. Violet starts following her around, like
might have followed her on Facebook. I probably have.
Yeah, Gina, you absolutely need to read this book tonight because I think you're Alice. Alice is the protagonist.
Great. Okay,
you are Alice.
Well, I hope to God she wins. She's the protagonist, and
everyone loves Alice. So
okay, good.
She follows she follows the woman, and then the horrible woman ends up dead. That's like not the end of the book, obviously, but so it's all about how Alice gets out of it, and it's funny and charming.
I'll look forward to it.
And the next one is about a woman with postpartum depression who gets over her postpartum depression by solving the murders of the mean, horrible moms from the kids' preschool.
Well, I want to ask you how much of that. First of all, I love all of that. How much of that is inspired by conversations you might have had with your husband about things, or like any of that inspired? I mean, I only say
following
that.
Following Polly is totally the Alice, except for the stalking thing.
Right.
Is because I stalk people in my head, and I would have done all the things that she did on Facebook had at that age. You know what I mean? She's much younger than I am
right
now. And so she's basically me.
Right, I get that. And I didn't mean to, it's like that all of a sudden we're talking about women and I'm like, and your husband, how much is that?
Yes,
no, but I didn't mean it in that way.
My
husband, how much did he blame
my
on?
My husband is very attractive
husband,
to her.
How much did your husband do? No, but
he
I
wrote
meant, like,
the whole thing.
Did your husband write the book?
Yeah, he did. He wanted to give me some credit for something because he felt bad.
I meant just in terms of conversations you might have had, like with his work too. You know what I mean?
Because
did he come home with stories too that you could have, like, you know, like when you're home all day, possibly, like,
no,
none of that. Okay,
just, no, it's all from my imagination.
I love that. That's the better version of the answer.
Yeah,
the,
no, yeah. No. And in fact, what my husband is good at is saying, like, if I have a question about how something could happen, like how somebody could commit a certain kind of crime. Like, he'll give me this, like, the steps that they have to do, or the steps that they have to do in front to get, like, caught by the police or to escape the police.
I think
like
in
that.
My convoluted way.
That was your question.
That was my question.
Right.
My inarticulate way of asking that question. So, yes. So, how long did each take to write?
A couple of years.
It did.
Yeah.
It did. That's.
They take a long time to write. They're longer. It's longer than having a baby.
And you wrote, what year did you write? Both.
Following Polly came out in 2010, and Perfect is Overrated came out 2 years later. And I'm working on another one that's taking me so long that hopefully...
Also murder?
No murder. And it's got three protagonists. That's why it's taking me so long.
Okay.
It's one of those where it's like, you know, different, looking at different people. And I have no idea if it's going to ever...
Did you fancy yourself a writer in this regard?
Never. Never. I was always a reader. Like, I've read like a million books. Like, I'm a real reader, and I read everything. I read trash. I read classics. I read everything. And I used to read books for Book of the Month Club and write reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And often what would happen is the publishers would send the books to Book of the Month Club. You know, it's like
that way. You reviewed Book of the Month Club books.
Yeah.
How did you get that gig?
Because my friend was the head of the Book of the Month Club.
Okay.
And she, so, but it's kind of like a thankless job. Like, you basically read a whole book and you have to write a summary of it. And I can tell you that 70% of the books that I read were just dreadful. And they were all getting published. And this was back when things got published.
Sure.
Now, not so much. But, and I kept saying, I bet I could write a better book than this. Like, and it wasn't braggy. It was really just like kind of fact. So... that gave me the confidence to do it. I thought, wow, a novel just seems like a really long commitment. But I also never really wanted to write a short story. I felt like once you started to write a short, like nobody really reads a short story anymore unless it's by like a famous novelist. So I, or the New Yorker or something. I just really wanted, like, I wanted to see if I could do it.
Okay. So what just, in a nutshell, what were the steps that you took from start to finish that got this published?
Well, it took me a really long time to write it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to rewrite it a million times. I submitted it to an agent who I worked with who kept trying to get me to change it. And I didn't understand what she was saying. And then my friend who had been the head of the Book of the Month Club had, during that time, become an agent. And she said, let me see if I can fix it. She literally sat me down and said, this is what you need to do. And I fixed it in 2 weeks. I fixed it. And 3 weeks later, I had a deal. Now, that did not happen with the next book. It took much longer to get the deal. Because by that point, the difference in publishing between 2010 and 2012, because of all the stuff that's going on with self-publishing, is enormous. And now it's... crazy. It's even crazier now. You know, you see these people, they give out a $2 million deal to one person, and then everybody else is on his or her own. You know, it's just, yes, it's just not, it's crazy. They're, so,
yeah.
So that, you know, I had obviously a friend in the business who made certain things easier for me. But she didn't publish the book, you know. So, but, you know, people who, I think the key thing with writing, it's like the stand-up thing. It's like the Lampoon thing. You've got to just keep going. Like, you know, my kids see me rewriting books over and over, and I just say to them, like, sometimes you, it doesn't work, and you have to do it again. I've written a whole book that just got rejected by everyone. Like, it almost got a deal, and then got rejected, and then I'm like, I'll just start again. And so it's, it is so much, it's like stand up. It's, you know, both of these things, I pick the two most, you know,
yes,
like not paying well, like impossible to get done kinds of jobs, but I must hate myself.
Well, I don't think so. Honestly, you don't. You do not. And what I want to say here is that with following Polly, with any of them, interest in film?
Yeah. Well, I had an option that ran out, and then I have somebody who's now really interested, and I've written, actually wrote it for, I wrote a pilot for it for like a TV series.
Okay.
Still being shopped around. Okay. And then, but I'm also going to write my own script. I decided I'm going to write my own. The people who optioned it, like I saw what they, and they never followed through, but I saw what they were doing with the screenplay, and it was awful. Like, and I think it was like the book thing where you think, I can't do that. But then of course you write the book and you're like, I can do that. Like writing a book, writing a TV show, like, you know, if you watch a few TV shows and you read a few books, you see how it's done. I mean, obviously some people are better at writing them than others, you know?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I agree with you that there's just going back, there's a lot of people that are writing things that you can literally say, I can do better than this.
Right.
There's probably a few of us out there that are like that, you know, even right. with stand-up, you know, a lot of,
right.
the reason I'm doing stand-up, even though I'm not, I don't think I'm, I mean, I'm funny, but part of the reason I do it is because there were people coming in, I'm like, I'm funnier than that.
Totally.
I'm funnier
it
than
gives
that.
You confidence.
It's the, like, I can't believe it.
Their lack of talent is giving you confidence.
Right? I know, it's crazy. Yeah, I know. It's inspirational. Now, right. It's Mother's Day coming up.
Yes.
And so you're a comic, you're an author, you're an actress, Gaffigan Show. What'd you do on that?
I was the MC, like I played basically myself as the MC in a comic
right.
club.
Great.
So, a few times.
So wonderful. What would you say, though, as a mom to other moms in light of Mother's Day? That have careers that are juggling and that they're juggling.
Well, I really do believe like the perfect is overrated, which really isn't and have anything to do with the substance of the book. I really do believe that that's true. Like I think, you know, I think mothers like will sit and beat themselves up about all this crap that's going on at work, that's going on with their kids. You know, I never see like if my husband like makes a misstep with the kids, you know, like he makes like a bad punishment decision, like either a decision to punish or not to punish if it's like a bad decision, I'll sit and beat my head against a wall like, ooh, I made a bad move and that's going to screw them up and they're going to hate me or they're going to be a bad person when they grow older because I didn't give enough attention to this or I punished them too much and I'm making them anxious and like I'll sit and drive myself crazy over really something dumb. My husband will make a misstep like that and he'll be like, yeah, I made a misstep. Like he doesn't like, and I
he
think
doesn't
we
carry
could,
the weight of it
at all. Yeah. And I think that's a lesson we could really learn from, you know, from the men is that like we are going to make little stupid mistakes like that, and we should want to, you know, if we want to get together, like you know, most husbands like go out for drinks like every now and then with their friends after work, or they call them their colleagues, you know? So
yes.
I go out with my mommy friends and I call them my colleagues because mommyhood is part of my business. And I say to my husband, I'm going to go out with my moms right now because that's part of like keeping my kids like happy is to have a good social relationship with these other mothers, which frankly isn't true, but it makes, you know, it's not necessary that he goes out with all these other people either. I mean, we have to We have to be good to ourselves, you know.
Absolutely. Now, when you do these things for the kids, and are you involved in all those, you know, PTA kind of, are you, like,
yes.
all of that stuff?
Yes.
That, and I take it that a lot of that might be in the book as well.
And Perfect is Overrated, yes. I have. Well, it's a nursery school, so it's more like it's not so much PTA. It's a little bit of that.
Okay.
But it's more like the annoying New York mothers, you know, okay. which are.
I could only assume that you encounter. Yeah. I wish we had this videoed.
Yeah, I know.
I
love most of them, but it's actually kind of perfect because it is kind of fun. It's like sport to hate some of them because some of them like outdo themselves.
Is it gossipy? Is there a little?
It's a little gossipy. When there's a kid that's particularly horrible and the parent doesn't do anything about it, there's gossip. When a kid is kind of in trouble and you see the parent like struggling in trouble, not gossip because we're all like, we could be in that situation. But if there's like when there's a bully, like there's a couple bullies in my son's class and the parents are oblivious and it's a little bit of a sport to sit around and say like, doy, your kid's a bully.
Right.
Like if a kid is flunking out of a subject, it's not, nobody will ever, I have no idea if that's the case. I have no idea because it's not something people would talk about because it's not nice. But I think it's when the kid is a bully, it's usually the parent has raised a bully.
Exactly. Yeah. And speaking of bullies, that's another article that you wrote. We'll close with this. We'll close with this about bullies. You talked about this bully also named Karen.
Right.
And you know, how that was for you as a kid. And how later you met this person.
I met her at a dinner party.
And her name?
She had a different name. Because she had, and at the end of the dinner party, it was like a scene out of a movie. Like, I get chills just thinking about it. I have chills.
Yes.
She said, did you go to, and she said, the camp I went to. And I said, yeah. And she's like, I'm Karen, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, she was horrible. Like, because she didn't even look like her. And she said, everything about me is different now. It was a really bad time in my life. Like, my parents were going through a horrible divorce. I mean, it is such a thing of, it all goes back to the parents. Like, she's like, my parents were going through a horrible divorce, and I was so miserable, and I'm so sorry that I picked on you. And it was really satisfying for me. Like, it totally, I got over it within 1 second.
It's a great story. I loved even reading about it, that happened, like how things come full circle.
Right.
And so, you know, here we are at the end of this a wonderful talk. And I'm going to just say that I'm personally going to bully people by saying, you know, please buy Karen's book. Following books, Following Polly and Perfect is Overrated. Where can people find the books? On Amazon, correct?
On Amazon. I think that, you know, they only did one printing, one edition. Although, you know, if there's a lot of clamor, maybe they'll do a second edition, although it's the St. Martin's, they're kind of tough. But they, you can also contact me through my website if you can't get it from them. You can always obviously get it on Kindle and I think on Nook and iBooks and all that stuff. And they're really fun. I have to say, it's moms. It's a great, like, if you want to take a little day off from your kids on either Mother's Day or otherwise, they're good escapist read, but they got good reviews in the New York Times, O Magazine. Like, they're not, I always say it's like you don't feel dirty and gross reading them because it got good, you know, it's like smart humor.
They're appropriate.
Yeah. It's smart humor, but it's not, you know, it's not hard. You don't need to read it with like a study guide, you know.
Yes. Very good. I want to thank you. It's short and it went fast.
Thank you.
And I loved having you, and we'll have you back.
Thank you, Gina. This was so much fun.
Thank you. And so again, KarenBergreen.com, right?
Yes,
on your
KarenBergreen.com.
website. Facebook.
Facebook, Twitter, which interested in. It's Karen Bergreen, but I like, okay. I'm a big fan of Facebook because I like the interaction.
Are you appearing anywhere for Mother's Day yourself? Are you working this week?
I am not appearing on Mother's Day because my husband is going away on business on Mother's Day. So I'm going to just spend it with the kids. We're going to do something.
Okay.
So, but I'll be in a bunch of places this week. I'm at Broadway, actually, Friday night, May 6th. And then I'm in something in Rahway, New Jersey called the Battle of the Sexes.
Just as long as it's not the prison.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is there a prison in Rahway?
There's a prison in Rahway.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What
Karen
if this
Bergreen,
is all like
live
a,
at Rahway State,
ruse.
Whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
Thank you for being here. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Red Light Podcast, Redux. I'm your host, Gina Savage. Want to thank the WROM radio listeners in Detroit for tuning in, internet users worldwide, subscribers Jim Verne on Sound. We'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us.